We were feeding people low-fat diets, low-fat in the sense that it was less than 30 energy percent, and this was the actual recommendation that many of the European and expert European and American expert committees were suggesting. And there were two separate populations responding to palmitic acid in two different ways. And one of the early tests of this hypothesis was a study we conducted in Europe, in Holland, and this was done in Maastricht, where we decided that we will take the typical Dutch diet and maximally substitute that fat content in the Dutch diet with palm oil. And the hypothesis was that if palm oil did that and the palmitic acid in palm oil was cholesterol raising, then you would see a substantial increase in cholesterol levels compared to the typical European diet. Fortunately, unfortunately, we saw no changes in the total and LDL cholesterol when we substituted the typical European diet or the Dutch diet with palm oil. But what was interesting was the fact that a diet rich in palmitic acid was having some influence on HDL cholesterol levels, and this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Now, this gave us an insight that potentially we could isolate the different saturated fatty acids that you and I consume in our diet, and we could separate their effects on total and LDL cholesterol levels. To test the hypothesis, with the help of Professor Casey Hayes here, we actually designed a study where we maximized lauric and myristic acid in one population and compared it with palmitic acid in a crossover double-blinded study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. What we did find here was that the response due to lauric and myristic acid versus palmitic acid was not identical. They were different. And in this case, the lauric and myristic acid was significantly cholesterol-raising and LDL cholesterol-raising compared to the palmitic-rich diet. So this set the stage for us to think where the saturated fat story was evolving. And very recently, we pulled out some of the older studies and looked at what is the effect of lauric and myristic acid. Earlier in the day, Dr. Brouwer did indicate that the meta-analysis from Mensing and Catan did indicate that lauric was cholesterol reducing. But in Nature, if you're looking for lauric acid, it's never on its own. It's in a combination of lauric and palmitic acid. And therein lies an association that if you had a diet that was enriched, or much of the energy, the saturated fatty acid energy, came from a combination of lauric and had an ability to increase total and LDL cholesterol significantly more than if you had a combination coming from palmitic acid alone. Now, this is an interesting observation because we were trying to also relate it to epidemiology, but that is currently ongoing through the published data. What we've done in the short term is that this spiked our interest because when we talk about palm oil is actually synonymous with saturated palmitic acid, and you have heard the agenda of the tropical oils in this country, especially in America. So what we did was to pull out all the current published studies that have used palm oil to evaluate its responses on total and LDL cholesterol levels. We've just started doing a meta-analysis. I must apologize, this is not a refined meta-analysis, but it's still crude. It's a work in progress. But I highlight this simply because we were able to pull out 36 human studies that, again, need to go through proper re-evaluation to see if they can all be included in the meta-analysis. But the preliminary analysis already shows us that if you're dealing with palmitic acid, there are two sets of population responses, even from these 36 studies. Now, on the left, you have a series of studies. 17 of the 36 actually reported increases in total cholesterol due to palmitic acid from palm oil. And this, if you look at these studies, much of these origins of the studies were the European and American studies. On your right, there are the newer studies which have used better controls, if you like, lower levels of fat intake. And in this, there appears to be a second set of population, 19 studies showing a non-significant increase in total and LDL cholesterol, despite the high levels of palmitic acid in the diet. So where are we headed with this data? Now, the statisticians tell us that if your final line crosses the mid part, then it has got this particular diet of fat has got no effect on total or LDL cholesterol, or it is not increasing your total LDL cholesterol. If you do a composite of the 36 human studies, then we end up with this bottom here, which suggests that palm oil, palmitic acid, may not be as cholesterol raising as it has been postulated previously. But there are definitely studies in the literature that indicate, the studies like Danke, the studies of Paul Nestel and Martin Catan, for example, that do indicate that palmitic-rich diet coming from palm oil can increase your total and LDL cholesterol. So there's more work to be done as far as this is concerned. We've also looked at LDL responses, and the LDL responses are, again, very, very similar to what you see in the total cholesterol. 19 studies show a non-significant LDL response. 14 show a significant or unfavorable increase in LDL response due to palmitic acid in palm oil. Now, the story on HDL is only emerging because slowly in the lipid world, we are learning that saturated fatty acids have an ability to increase HDL cholesterol. It doesn't always come out very strongly in the analysis that's been done, but here is a case where we pulled out the data from palm oil, and 26 of these studies actually report an increase. Some of them are significant. Most of them are non-significant increases as far as HDL cholesterol is concerned. But if you do a net, this thing, it still has got a null effect, if you like. So this is the literature we have at hand from the published study. So I was trying to reason out why this response is apparent in palmitic-rich diets. Now, one of the analysis, the sub-analysis we have done with a subsector of the studies that we have put into the database, we try to isolate it on the basis of the percentage energy, total fat energy coming in from these dietary interventions. Now, there is a stepwise indication that if you had less than 31% energy as fat, and much of the saturated fat came from palmitic acid, and if you progressively went up to 34 to 37, and the very high fat intakes of 37 energy percent, there seems to be a stepwise increase in total and LDL cholesterol responses due to palmitic acid. So the question now is that if you are formulating a recommendation, would it be apparent that if you control the level of palmitic acid, not just saturated fatty acid in the diet, palmitic acid in the diet, would the lipid levels be better controlled even in a high saturated fat diet? So these are questions, scientific questions that are begging to be answered, and I hope some of you will take up those challenges as we go along. Now, the world actually currently is going to face a shortage of dietary fats. As much as America would wish to reduce the fat intake in your population, there are populations out there in the world that do not get enough fat in the diet. And if you do not have enough fat in the diet, the worst case scenario is malnutrition or impaired nutrition does occur. Among the two most important edible oils in the world are palm oil and soybean oil. There's no running away from that. And this is a scenario that is going to last forever. Now, there's a wish list among many of us. We would like everybody to eat olive oil based on the Mediterranean diet. But fortunately, unfortunately, there is simply not enough supply in the world to factor olive oil or olive oil consumption and production in the world if everybody decides to do that. So we are left with two oils, soya and palm, and the major producers I put here just in the interest. So if you're looking at formulating the best dietary advice for your population, it is very apparent that depending on the region where you come from, you would have to take these two oils into consideration. And we've already seen the obtuse angle at which the food industry has been put into as a result of the trans fat issue. Previously, soybean oil was partially hydrogenated to make the solid fats, and in America and Europe, trans fat was the dominant or the dominant saturated fat that went into bakery fats and margarine formulations. As a result of data like this that speaks volumes about the adverse effects of trans fatty acids, there is a increasing requirement to get rid of trans from the human food chain. And one of the solutions available to the world is actually palm oil, because palm oil, despite its high palmitic acid content, is semi-solid. And there is already enough literature to suggest, you can look up this studies like this and others that say that if you reformulated your trans fats with palm oil as part of the formulation ingredient, the lipid levels would be better than a partially hydrogenated fat. So that's why increasingly palm oil is being used in many of these food formulations. But there is also a challenge to the liquid oil manufacturers, because if you take away the partial hydrogenation aspect of food technology, you have to allow these liquid oils to partake in the solid fat formulations. And the current scenario that has been incorporated is a technique called full hydrogenation of the liquid oil, which then converts all the carbon atoms into a stearic-rich block. But unfortunately, the stearic-rich block is not fully digested or absorbed, and you would have to undergo a process called interesterification and in order to make it more digestible and absorbed and viable for human metabolism. The problem is, when you do interesterification, we are never sure of the new triglyceride molecules that you generate as a result of this process. And about 4 years ago, we published this study that looked at a fully hydrogenated interesterified fat for its impacts on blood lipid levels and plasma glucose levels. What surprised us was not so much the lipid levels, but the fact that a fully hydrogenated interesterified fat that was rich in stearic acid had a tendency to significantly increase plasma glucose levels. Now, this study, I must confess, was hotly debated, but I know a number of laboratories out there who are looking or re-looking at this data. Now, there is one other study that agrees with that observation that we published. This was a Judd study, and the Judd study's outcomes, which are in yellow, seems to somewhat follow the levels that we suggested with the interesterified fat. So there is a precedence to that. But the issue is that it is not just a fatty acid. And then here we get into a more complicated issue. We've been talking the whole morning about fatty acids, straight-chain fatty acids. But if you look at the triglyceride molecule, it gets very complicated. There is an interplay with the SN1 and 3 fatty acids on the triglyceride molecule versus the SN2 fatty acids on the molecule. It depends the quality of the fat that is ingrained in the triglyceride molecule, and it has an effect. Now, we went back to the laboratory to undertake a recent study. This has just been completed, so I thought I'll throw in the data. We put in a typical 32 energy percent fat, and we tailor-made the fats that either looked at 16-0 or 18-0, but in this case, we ensured that the linoleic acid content in the diets compared were identical. This is unpublished data. And if you look at it, unlike the previous study where we published, here was a situation where not only the palmitic acid content was controlled, but the linoleic acid content in the diets was typically well-defined, well-controlled. And we had three instances: interesterified rich 18-0 stearic acid, and a natural 18-0 that came from cocoa butter. As you can see, we're very fortunate. None of the blood lipids responded to the different types of fat permutations that were fed, except triglyceride molecules. The triglycerides, the plasma triglyceride levels, were significantly increased by both the two types of stearic acid-rich fats. Now, in a very simplistic approach, if you are trying to peg stearic acid as neutral, here is a case where the effects of palmitic acid were identical to that of stearic acid. So that throws a spanner in the works, if you like. But what is intriguing was the fact that even in this formulation, remember the previous study, we did indicate that high stearic acid diets seem to impact plasma glucose levels. We repeated that, and here again, if you had an interacidified stearic-rich fat, it's a second case where plasma glucose levels were significantly higher than the natural 18-0 and the natural 16-0 diet. And what was a little mind-boggling was the fact that the stearic-rich fat was also increasing plasma insulin levels. So there's a little bit more work that needs to be done in understanding the impact of stearic acid and palmitic acid before we call it a day. We've also looked at, more critically, in light of the 2010 dietary guidelines in the USA, we decided to look more critically at the data available on stearic acid because the USDA was suggesting that there may be a need to label stearic acid as neutral. Now, we looked at the data, and these are some of the studies that we pulled from the literature directly comparing palmitic acid, either natural stearic, interacidified stearic, versus palmitic-rich diets. Definitely, there is a case where stearic acid appears to be better than palmitic acid in its cholesterol responses, total cholesterol and LDL cholesterol. But in all cases, most of these studies also resulted in significant decreases due to the stearic acid on HDL cholesterol. And you see that the ratios are then in the opposite direction. So it's not really a clean bill of health that you could give stearic acid. Similarly, if you did the stearic and lauric myristic acid combinations, a similar effect was seen. LDL lowering noted in eight of the 10 studies, all except one significantly lowered the HDL cholesterol. So this is something that you really have to pan out before you decide what stearic acid is going to do. But the case for labeling, at least in my opinion, is that if you're going to call stearic acid neutral, then the neutrality must be pegged against either 18-2, linoleic acid, or oleic acid. So we looked at the effect of stearic acid versus linoleic acid from a subsection of the study. And here's a case that stearic acid significantly increases LDL cholesterol and total cholesterol, as well as plasma triglyceride levels compared to stearic acid. And in all these cases, HDL cholesterol was lowered. Therefore, the total cholesterol by HDL cholesterol is not really in favor for stearic acid. Okay? And then the next set of analysis, then if you compare it against 18-0 versus 18-1, a similar picture also is apparent, but less significant than the effects of 18-2. So if these are the major fatty acids that we are interested in and which we know has the major impact, at least 18-2 has the major impact on cholesterol metabolism, is it right to move forward with the neutrality of stearic acid? I think it is rather premature. So we may have to do more response to that. Now, the second caveat with stearic acid appears to be the way it is processed. Right now, the natural stearic acid sources are not abundant unless you're looking at beef tallow, mutton tallow. Most of the stearic acid that goes into food formulations, you need to take a liquid oil, fully hydrogenate it, and then interesterify it. And if you look at the effect of interesterified stearic acid that is used in some of these studies, and you can see the responses are not very becoming, it has got a impact on the lipid levels. And then you have to ask the question, it is not just the carbon molecule itself, it's the placement of the stearic acid in the SN2 position. Because when you do interacidification, most of the time the stearic acid will reside in the 2 position, although there's an alternate IE process, the enzymatic process, that allows specific placement of stearic acid in the 1 and 3 position. So these are some of the challenges that the industry or science has to face before we go ahead and say any of the saturated fatty acids are going to be labeled differently from each other. And you can also see that the triglyceride response is very acute due to some of these stearic acid manipulations. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of issues there with the saturated fatty acid, and that's why many of us continue to work with it. But these are short-term acute studies on which the data is based. But if you ask me to draw some quick conclusions on some of the analysis and some of the studies that we have done, I would go and do it as far as this. If you're looking at 18O, stearic acid, we, at least in my mind, I say that the call for 18O or stearic acid neutrality currently appears rather premature. The lipid responses may also be a function of the fatty acid placements on the triglyceride molecule. And this second agenda is really a major and a difficult agenda. We don't see many specialized labs around the world who are able to address this issue. But probably, if you want to understand fatty acid nutrition or saturated fatty acid nutrition better, we have to do some concerted work in this direction. What about 16O? We see a mixed bag of responses, especially for total and LDL cholesterol. And this is based, to some extent, on percentage energy contributed in the diet. Now, in the West, it may be an issue, but in the East, where a lot of the populations are consuming less than 20-25% energy, you really have to ask a question. Is palmitic acid going to be an issue for cardiovascular health in these populations? But I'm also alerted by the fact that there are subsections of that population who would consume very high fat, and then they would start mimicking the Western agenda of, you know, if you have too much palmitic acid, increases the risk for heart disease in that population. For low-fat consuming populations, the question we have to ask, at least from the part of the world where I come from, whether 16O can be conditionally neutral. And finally, if you have to use 16O, palmitic acid, my own preference from the work is that just use natural sources. If you're using processed palmitic acid or processed saturated fatty acids, we don't really understand the outcomes. Processing may have an impact, additional impact on nutrition. We are not sure yet. So definitely the take is that, end of the day, more research appears to be in the order. So the need to continue working on fat and saturated fatty acids is very obvious. Ladies and gentlemen, let me stop there, and I would like to acknowledge the fact that this experience that I've had has been a long journey, and I would like to actually acknowledge some of the people who have put me in the field, Frank Lindgren, the late David Krucheski, Casey Hayes is here, and John Chanak from Australia. And I was very fortunate that this journey was not in just one laboratory, but many laboratories around the world. And to you folks, thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions. If anyone would like to come up to the microphone.
Dr. Sundrum, I'd like to start out with the inner esterified triglycerides. With the stearic acid ending up in the SN2 position, was there ever any indication of fat malabsorption in the people because of the reduced hydrolysis of the stearic?
No, I think that's why when they fully hydrogenate, you get a tristearine block. And the interesterification is usually done with a liquid oil, and that takes care of the issue of, and then you find, it depends on the interesterification. If it's a chemical interesterification, there's an opportunity for 30%, it's an equal distribution, one-third, 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 of any of these fatty acids on the molecules. But if it's a target 1-3 enzymatic process, then you can modulate the processes in such a way that you can manage the triglyceride molecule better. But we have never saw any signs of malabsorption or fat excretion in this studies when we did those studies. Thank you.
Thanks.
Don, I've looked at that question before in animals, and if you feed enough stearic acid, then you see a malabsorption. If you feed it within the range that you'd find, you know, 4 to 8% energy in our diets, what you find is a slowed absorption, but it eventually gets broken up and absorbed. So the idea that you are going to form soaps and things and lose a lot of the stearic acid doesn't seem to hold, and all the human literature would support that. Very interesting. I didn't see all that data before. And I'm curious, when you were looking at the effect of the two different populations of palmitic acid in the data and the epidemiology meta-analysis, did you happen to look at the 18.2 content of those two pools?
Okay.
Percent energy intake.
No, you see, this is one of the problems where we have to do a secondary analysis for 18.2 content. In many of these studies, 18.2 content was all over the place. And some of these studies could date back to the early 60s when the designs were such that they just targeted a specific fatty acid without taking into consideration the impact that linoleic acid would have on the overall lipoprotein cascade. And some of these studies, the early studies, were actually done with liquid formula diets, and we know that the responses are often pretty acute in those studies.
Another point that I'd make is it may be a fact that as you increase the amount of palm oil, you said 25-30% energy, I mean the diet, the higher fat, and you actually increase the amount of palm oil, you begin to get a hypercholesterolemic effect of palmitic. That may be because you're adding more and more of the solid fraction in palm oil, the stearin fraction. It's in the mix, and you're getting an SN2-16O.
Those studies actually, well, we didn't do it. We pulled out from the literature. Those were the earlier European and American studies that at that time, fat consumption in this part of the world was approaching nearly 40 energy percent. And then they just fed it at that levels, and all the fat was substituted by the target test diets, in this case palm oil. And it was just the quantity of fat and the quantity of palmitic acid in the diet that contributed to that straight line effect that you see on saturated palmitic acid.
But they were feeding palm oil, right? They weren't feeding blends, and they weren't feeding palmoline.
No, it was at that time it was almost entirely palm oil.
Yeah,
palm oil, total.
Right,
right.
Well, that's very nice stuff. Thank you.
Just a quick question for your comment. This data seems to correlate the various oils to biomarkers. Mm-hmm. Rather than and outcomes. To contrast this against what I recall of the Harvard Nurses Cohort Study, 20 years, 80 to 100,000 population, saturated fat in terms of real health risk, as I recall, was neutral.
Yep.
Do you have a comment?
I think what's happening with lipid science today, the new data that's coming out from the Harvard Medical School and some of the meta-analysis that you see are talking a different story from what you and I were taught to believe as far as saturated fat responses. But in some of these studies that are randomized crossover design, we do see that you can, you know, for me, you could actually target the diet and the fat and therefore solicit a response in an individual. And that's what we are seeing. So I think unfortunately for us, where palm oil, palmitic acid is concerned, there is no epidemiological evidence. The only epidemiological evidence I know of was a study done in Nigeria with a very small population of less than 300 people, and they just looked at the lipid levels. And there the fat intake was very low, and that correlated with the low-fat diet with palm oil that I indicated. So the science literature is full of these endpoints that need to be dragged out and reassessed somehow. And that's what we are trying to do, apart from doing new clinical trials as we go along.
I'd like to thank Dr. Sundram for an excellent presentation.
Thank you.